Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. In this, the wealthiest, best-fed nation on Earth, believe it or not, some of us still don't have access to the freshest fruits and vegetables. We don't eat the most nutritious meals, but for some of us, it's not just a lack of discipline. For some of us, it really is a lack of access. Dr. Justin Gardner of the School of Agribusiness and Agriscience is here today to try to tell us what's being done at the university level to try to rectify that situation. The university has a relationship with the Rutherford County Farmers Market that is designed to help people who are on assistance to use their benefits to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables. We'll be back with more after some healthy words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Seven students from MTSU's College of Mass Communication will spend 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, supplying coverage of the U.S. District Courts and other federal entities for print and web publication by the Tennessean. They will operate out of the Tennessean's newsroom for the semester. The effort will be known as the Siegenthaler News Service in honor of journalism icon John Siegenthaler. And MTSU alumnus J.B. Baker, owner of Sprint Logistics and chairman of the board for trucking company Volunteer Express, Inc. and associated companies, is the recipient of this year's Jennings A. Jones Champion of Free Enterprise Award. Baker's company, whose motto is large enough to perform, small enough to care, now employs 325 workers in 30 locations across Tennessee and the Northeast. For MTSU News Anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Justin, it's been a while. Thanks for being back with us today.
Thanks, Jenna. It's always good to be on.
How did it get started?
The farmers market at the Lane Ag Center is managed by University of Tennessee Extension, as well as TSU Extension, and it's an additional partner there is Rutherford County itself. Rutherford County owns the property. And I was, to be honest with you, I was looking for an opportunity. I'm always looking for an opportunity. I stumbled across a grant from the USDA called the Farmers Market Promotion Program, and it looked like a very good program. It was designed to do, as you talked about, to reach low-income individuals and bridge the gap between them and farmers so they could buy produce directly from a farmer. So I picked up the phone one day and called Janie Becker out at the Farmers Market. She's the manager of the market, to ask her if she's heard of the grant and what she thought about me partnering to apply for it. And her response was, I've been looking at this grant for a couple of years and trying to figure out how I could pull it off. And she was thrilled that I called her. And so we just got to work and filled out the paperwork and quite fortunately received this grant. The Farmers Market Promotion Program, it's a USDA program. The goal is, just like it says, to promote farmers market, to promote farmers markets, especially programs to help low-income individuals gain access to farmers markets. And so that's kind of the hook for the grant. The grant was really looking for individuals who could help make that connection. You mentioned food deserts when you introduced me. A food desert is an area that it's a census tract where there is a low income and a substantial number of residents have low access to a supermarket or a large grocery store. So this is an area that has poor people who can't get to a place to buy quality food. These food deserts often have stores in them where they can buy food. They might just be a gas station. To qualify as low income, a census tract must either be have a poverty rate that's 20% or higher, or the median family income has to be at or below 80% of the area's median family income.
And these food deserts can be either rural or urban, right?
Yes, they can be rural or urban. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the biggest difference between the rural and the urban is for a rural food desert, it's a larger distance to the nearest grocery store. Mm-hmm. The idea being that you would definitely need a car to traverse 10, 15 miles to get to a grocery store. That's the only difference between the rural and the urban ones. And in fact, there are two food deserts right here in Rutherford County, right here in Murfreesboro. Just to give you some idea, Rutherford County is a fairly wealthy place, if you haven't noticed it. The median household income in Rutherford County is about $52,000 a year. So that means half the households in the county have an income less than $52,000, half have an income higher than $52,000. That's going to put us either second or third or fourth, depending on the year. Williamson County is usually the highest one, with a number around $83,000. Right. And there are no food deserts in Williamson County. Wilson County is oftentimes going to be ranked up right here next to Rutherford County, right here with us. If we go back around from Hickman County, the median household income is going to be under 40. I forget the last number. I think it was something close to 34 or 35,000. So there's a rural area where half the people in the county earn less than, about $35,000 a year.
The largest grocery store chains are sometimes disinclined to locate in certain neighborhoods, aren't they? Because they don't think it would be profitable, or they don't think it would necessarily be safe. I'm talking sometimes about inner city neighborhoods where sometimes you'll have small grocery stores there, but so it's not technically maybe a food desert, but they sell lousy quality stuff.
Well, it's more than just that. Retail floor space in the middle of a crowded city can be very expensive sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Taxes.
Exactly. And so it is difficult to run a profitable business in these kind of poor areas that we're thinking of. Mm-hmm. To give you an idea of the food deserts that are here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, there are actually two census tracts that are flagged as food deserts. Mm-hmm. One of them is basically the downtown census tract. It stretches westward to eastward from Memorial Boulevard over to Middle Tennessee Boulevard here at the university. So basically everything from the university over to Memorial Boulevard is a food desert. And if you're familiar with the area, I only know of one grocery store there. Going south to north from Vine Street up to Clark Street. Mm-hmm. And the only grocery store that I'm aware of in that area is going to be the JR's Foodland on Main Street.
Exactly where that is. It's about halfway up Main Street between the square and the university.
Yeah, which is, from what I hear, a great grocery store. I've never personally been in there because my wife won't let me shop. But it's a perfectly fine store, but people have to walk to get there if they don't have a car. In that census tract, there are about 1,000 people with low access and about 200 classified as low income. Now, the other census tract, you wouldn't think it would be a food desert. You wouldn't think it would be a low income place. It's a bigger census tract. The numbers are about the same, about 1,000 individuals with low access and about 200 classified as low income. Basically, it joins that census tract, but north of it, which is I wouldn't consider that a bad part of town by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
It basically is going to run from... It stretches from Clark up to DeJarnett, so like the entire airport sitting in the food desert. Mm-hmm. And then east to west, or rather west to east, it runs from Memorial out into the county, actually. That census tract goes out to about Twin Oak Drive out in the county.
Right.
And so it's a pretty large landmass. So those two census tracts together would be our local food desert here.
You wouldn't think of the area, especially around the university or that you described, the first food desert you described, as being a food desert, or even the second food desert, because there are so many restaurants in both of those areas that they're not totally devoid of food, but they are devoid of grocery stores
where you can go and
purchase the fresh food.
It's grocery stores, then it's not just the fact that there aren't any grocery stores there, because there are some on the fringes of those food deserts. The problem is, you ever tried to go to the grocery store without a car?
Right.
Give it a try sometime. It's probably not too pleasant. I've never done that. I can't imagine carrying a week's worth of groceries back to my house from the Kroger that's just 2 or 3 miles from me. That would be a long way to walk, laden with bags.
Right.
And the problem is not so much a lack of stores, it's a lack of access to the stores.
Right.
Part of what you need to define a food desert is that lack of access. There's 1,000 people living in both those 2,000 total, mm-hmm, that just can't get to a grocery store easily. They don't have a car, and they're going to have to walk or find public transportation to get there.
We'll take a break right now. We'll be right back. We'll talk more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The Middle Tennessee State University Women's Studies Research Series features compelling monthly talks on gender-related topics by faculty and graduate students. The series offers a chance to learn about research in progress and to chat with faculty in an informal setting.
All lectures are free and open to the public and are held on the MTSU campus. This is Associate Professor of Journalism, Dr. Jane Marcellus.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Justin Gardner is our guest today. We're talking about MTSU's relationship with the Rutherford County Farmers Market to try to help facilitate purchases of fresh fruits and vegetables by low-income customers. Was it hard to convince the farmers market folks to take public assistance instead of cash in exchange for their products?
Oh, yes and no. There were a few farmers who were resistant and hesitant at the idea. Some of them for political ideological reasons. Some of them simply because of the extra hassle of getting the farmer reimbursed for the purchases. But I don't think there was as much resistance as I personally thought there would be. Most of the farmers out there seem to like the program. Just to kind of give you an idea, about 10% of the volume through the farmers market is going through our point of sale terminal, where we swipe a credit, a debit card, or an EBT card and exchange it for tokens that are good in the market. Roughly 10% of the business is coming through our terminal. The big question is how much of that's new business for the farmer, right? If that is all new business for the farmer, well, hey, that's great news. I wouldn't argue that it all is new business. Maybe half of it's new business, but all of the EBT business is new business for the farmer, because without this program in place, they couldn't accept EBT. And before we go further, we better do some defining so your listeners know what some of these buzzwords are. We don't call food stamps anymore.
That's because they're not coupons out of a booklet anymore. Everything's on these electronic cards.
Exactly. They've even changed the name of the federal program. It's now called SNAP. That stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That change in the name is consistent with the federal government's changing viewpoint towards assisting low-income individuals with food. It's moving away from let's just get people who are poor and hungry calories to let's focus on getting them something that's actually healthy instead of just pure calories. There's been a rampant rise in obesity. People of all income levels have had their obesity rates go up. And part of this shift has been towards let's actually focus on healthy and nutritious, which is part of where this farmers market program comes into play. If we can get individuals who are on this federal program out to a farmer's market where they're buying primarily vegetables, we know we can get them into something that's better than high-fat, high-carbohydrate processed foods.
The funny thing about it is that a lot of people think that people who are on public assistance or low-income people, the working poor, don't eat right just because they're ignorant or not very well educated or because they prefer caloric food more. But it's not. When fast food restaurants are closer to you and more convenient to you than grocery stores, then you're going to go for the cheapest version of convenience that you can access.
Well, there's a concept called transaction cost. The price of going out and buying something or the total cost of buying something isn't just the price you pay for it. It's also the process of going out, searching for it, searching for the best deal, getting across town to it. If you want to go across town to a grocery store, you've got to pay to get there. Mm-hmm. And your transportation costs, that element of your transaction costs, are very high if you don't have access to a vehicle. And so if you're trying to get something to eat and there is a small grocery store that accepts the SNAP benefits, you can walk in there and you can swipe the card and you can get a candy bar and you can have something to eat right there at the moment, and you don't have to worry about getting all the way across town to go there. And so from an economist's perspective, it really is a price issue. It's just cheaper from a standpoint of your time and your energy and your effort to get what's nearby.
towards that end, one of your major goals is trying to facilitate some kind of public transportation or some kind of group transit so that people who don't have their own motor vehicles can actually get to the farmers market, right?
Right. One of our goals is to kind of test, basically. I always view things as scientifically as possible. Let's find out if it'll work. So one of the goals of the project was to get access to some vans, find a community partner that we could partner with to run a route for us, and just see if people would ride a van out to the farmers market from some of these food desert areas in town. And that hasn't worked out quite as well as I hoped it would. We'd identified a community partner that was going to run a route for us. We were going to, you know, pay them to run a route. And they decided that they didn't want to do it. They weren't interested in an experiment. They basically told us, if you find out that it's going to be successful, give us a call and we'll do it. Kind of backed Alice at the last minute. And so we've not had many opportunities to explore those options since then. We invested our time in that relationship, and when it fell apart, it happened right before the market opened up, and we've been busy actually trying to facilitate this process out at the market. So that's one of my major goals for the spring semester is to get back on that and see if I can get someone to run a route for me.
Now, this relationship is only about 3 months old.
Right. We started in May, actually. May, when the market opens, when we started this process.
Okay. And have you been in touch with the farmers market folks to see how it's been working for them so far? Store traffic gone up? Do you know?
Well, that's actually a difficult question to answer, because before we started working with the market, no one was really tracking traffic very well. There had been some informal kind of here and there kind of head counts and stuff like that. I've been able to through this program, place an intern out there at the farmers market who can stand back and be the dedicated people counter. So we can get a solid estimate of how many individuals are coming in the door, mm-hmm. Which door they're coming in. If you've ever been out to the farmers market out on John Rice Boulevard, they open up the big bay doors and you can walk in anywhere. So you can't just sit at one place and look. So we've actually had an intern whose job it is to stand back and observe people and see who's coming in and he's got a piece of paper and some tally marks and he's counting the individuals as they come in.
It's working well, though, for the farmers getting paid, right? Because they get their payments either by direct deposit or by check, and it's a fairly quick turnaround, right?
It is. It is. If you go out to the farmers market, you don't need to use our point of sale terminal. You can go deal with an individual farmer and pay cash. So that cash transaction person to person hasn't changed. What has changed, if you walk out there and all you have is a piece of plastic that you can swipe through a machine, there's no ATM machine out there. You can then go to our point of sale terminal, you swipe that and you get the tokens, and then trade tokens for your food. And that works whether you're using the EBT card. That stands for electronic benefit transfer. That's how they actually transfer the food stamp benefits now, as well as other types of benefits. A lot of states, for example, use that to manage child support payments. And so it's not just, if you see someone with an EBT card, it's not just a poor person with food stamps. It could be any number of things.
The WIC program, women, infants, and children.
Actually, the WIC program hasn't gone to the EBT card yet.
Oh, yeah?
And they're actually, here in Rutherford County, is a specialized farmers market WIC program. Individuals who are on WIC can get a WIC voucher for, I think it's their $5 vouchers they get during a couple of months in the summer, that they can go out and then trade individually with a farmer with the WIC vouchers. And so the two programs tie in very nicely together.
So you can use WIC benefits at the farmer's market.
Yes.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The MTSU Educational Talent Search, or METS, reaches out to students in grades 6 through 12 in Coffee, Grundy, and Warren counties. We provide youngsters who have college potential with educational and financial aid counseling and guide them as they determine their educational and career goals. More than 95% of Educational Talent Search students graduate from high school, and more than 79% enroll in post-secondary education. This is METS Coordinator Debbie Frisbee.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Justin Gardner of the School of Agribusiness and Agriscience about MTSU's relationship with the Rutherford County Farmers Market, a relationship that is designed to help low-income people have better access to healthy food. What exactly is MTSU's role in all this, and what role, if any, do the students actually play in this relationship?
Well, the student role, I've had three interns, added a fourth one as the semester began. So from a student perspective, we're providing an internship opportunity with the students so that students can, you know, go out to the farmer's market, learn how these things are, learn how farmer's markets are typically managed, and learn how to work with customers, these kinds of things, your general kind of job skills you pick up on an intern. And other than the internships, the university's primary role is as a financial intermediary. We're basically the ones doing the accounting, and I wanted to always talk about always be thankful to the accounting services program over in the business office over in COPE, Ben Jones out there, who was he may have seen me in the paper recently, actually saved someone's life and was in the newspaper. Ben Jones in his office have done a fantastic job of helping out with this project. It's been such an exciting experience for me because as a faculty member at the university, I work with students on a day-to-day basis, and I very rarely get to see the business side of the university. And I've seen that now, and I know just how important the people in COPE are to making this university run. There's an army of individuals there that we never see, that the whole place would fall apart if they didn't show up to work one day. And so that's really what we're really all about here is working as a team, several, you know, the academic and the administrative components of the university, the business side and the academic side, working together to make our community a better place.
Your academic colleague, Dr. Nate Phillips, is in charge of the students who work in the MTSU Student Farmers Market,
yes,
which we have every summer, and we get emails, we employees do, reminding us that every Friday during the summertime, the Student Farmers Market will be selling fresh corn and cucumbers and onions and all kinds of things, as well as plants.
Just about anything you can imagine. They have Dr. Phillips uses that as part of a vegetable gardening class where he's actually teaching people, if you want to sell at this farmer's market and be a large-scale vegetable producer, here's how you do it. They have an organic and a non-organic garden that are separate from each other to keep the drift and spray off of one from the other. And, you know, while I talk about the farmer's markets in general, I want to talk about the one out there at Lane Ag Park over on John Rice Boulevard. Starting in November and going through Christmas, there'll be a Sunday afternoon market open from 1 to 4. It's a fantastic program out there. And what's unique about this market is it's a producer-only market. The UT and TSU Extension staff actually go out and do farm visits. If you want to sell at the market, an extension agent is going to come by and look at your operation because they want to verify that you are indeed the producer that produced this product and sold it at the market. It's a farmer's market. We spell farmers with a plural possessive, S apostrophe.
Right.
It is a market that belongs to the farmers. It exists to help farmers find a place to market their product. Part of the reason why they chose the hours that they do is they want to make sure they have multiple outlets for farmers to sell things. They might get more traffic on a Saturday market, but if you're only selling on Saturday, you're not going to move much product. You need to be open multiple days of the week. And so they're out there as a service to farmers. That's why they exist. And it is a producer-only market. A person could go and buy some produce from a wholesaler and put it in the back of their truck and pull up at a farmer's market and, you know, put their overalls on and start selling you produce. And you might walk it to them and thinking, well, here's the farmer who grew this. But it might not be. It could be a reseller. You know, a lot of people do the reselling thing. There's nothing necessarily wrong with it. It's just that maybe you're misrepresenting yourself to the consumer if you're a reseller. Mm-hmm. And the resellers aren't allowed in this market.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record in just a moment.
The Concrete Industry Management Program at MTSU fills the need for trained personnel who know concrete technology and techniques. Our alumni go into the marketplace grounded in basic math and science and able to promote products or services related to the industry. Our participation in the Academic Common Market ensures talented students in other states a chance to enroll on an in-state tuition basis. This is Dr. Heather Brown, Director of the program.
To find out more information on this or other university programs, visit mtsunews.com.
And our final moments with Dr. Justin Gardner, the MTSU School of Agribusiness and Agriscience. What makes the difference between the guy who just sets up a roadside stand and has a handmade sign that says, you know, fresh Georgia peaches, X amount a quarter, whatever he's selling it for, and the guy who will go and try to sell his produce at a farmer's market.
According to the 2007 Census of Agriculture, there are 1,525 farms in Rutherford County. Over half were less than 50 acres in size. The overwhelming majority of them had gross farm sales that were less than $10,000. So about 1,200 of the 1,500 sold less than $10,000 worth of farm products from their farm. And the average farm in Rutherford County during that year that Census of Ag was taken actually lost $2,800. So the individual that is out there on the farm getting their fingers in the dirt trying to make this dirt grow something, a drought this year, it's hard to grow things, is working a whole lot harder than the individual that just load the back of their pickup truck with peaches from Georgia and just did nothing more than drive. One of them is a farmer. That's the difference. One of them is a reseller. There's nothing morally wrong with reselling, not a thing wrong with that. But I grew up on a farm, and I'm in the ag program and have a degree in agricultural economics, and I'm kind of partial to farmers myself.
You want to talk about the impact the drought has had this year?
Oh, goodness. That's almost an entire other show. Well, the big story with the drought is it's really impacted corn and soybean prices. With vegetable products, a lot of that's going to be irrigated. We classify those in agriculture as specialty crops. I don't know why we call vegetables a specialty crop, but we do. In the U.S., our main agricultural product is going to be animal products, livestock, and, of course, corn. And this drought made it very difficult for farmers to grow their vegetable crops if they weren't irrigated. Watermelons were very small this year, for example. The corn harvest, the sweet corn that you would get at a farmer's market, there wasn't as much. Usually there's a whole lot more. The other thing, too, is there were fewer vendors at the farmer's market this season, and I think a lot of that was because of the drought. Now, big picture agriculture, it's a corn story. The price of corn is $8 a bushel right now, or it was the last time I looked, right about $8 a bushel. To give you an idea, it was $5 a bushel before the news of the drought began to wash over the markets. And so in about a six-week time period, it went from $5 to $8. It's a pretty large increase. That's going to lead to higher food prices. So expect to pay 3 or 4% more next year at the grocery store.
Does it also have anything to do with higher meat prices because it cost the farmer more to feed his animals?
It's exactly right. The bulk of our corn crop is going to go into either ethanol production or into feeding animals. And if the animal feed gets more expensive, well, you've got to sell the animal for more in order to justify feeding the thing, right?
Yeah, of course.
So we're gonna see meat prices are going to be hit pretty hard. A category the USDA calls fats and oils. We're talking about vegetable oil made from soybeans primarily, corn oil made from corn, that kind of thing. So fats and oils are going to be more expensive as well. You'll see the biggest hits at the retail level in meats and in fats and oils.
People want to know more. How do they get in touch with you?
My office number is 615-898-2418. My email address is justin.gardner@mtsu.edu. And so if anyone ever has any questions, you can just contact me. I'll answer questions.
Do you get a lot of flack about the irony of your being an agri-science, agribusiness professor, and your last name is Gardner?
You know, it's kind of funny because I'm not really good at growing things. plants come to my house to die. I'm the agribusiness professor. I'll let the agri-science professors grow things. They're much better at it than I am.
You don't have dirt under your fingernails, but you do have ink under your fingernails from doing all those facts and figures.
Hey, you know, I did grow up on a farm, so I spent plenty of time out there getting dirt under my fingernails.
Thanks, Dr. Justin Gardner.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.